Tango Tango Papa 2012, February 28, 2018.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Rogers, Minnesota. So, it has been about a month, roughly a month and about 10 days, a month and a third anyway, since the last podcast. I really didn't want that much time to elapse, but, you know, of course I've been pretty busy with work, and then I thought, well, you know, I was home for a few days for time off, and I thought, well, I'd record a podcast then, but of course it never happened, and then now I've been back at work for a few days, so so much for good intentions. Let's see, so not a whole lot other than lots of work has been going on. I have to kind of think back. So the last week of this last time I was out, you know, I usually stay out about roughly 3 weeks at a time. Sometimes a little less, sometimes usually a little more than that, but I had to get back for a dental appointment. I had a dental appointment on February 19, dental cleaning appointment. I have a dental cleaning appointment every 3 months, roughly. And so I had to get back for that. But in any case, I was, for the last time I was gone, out in the truck, I got kind of swamped, or, you know, reeled into doing Walmart stuff for a week. Now, I've done that before a couple of times. The first time was at, there's a distribution center in around Columbus, Ohio, and I did that for a couple of weeks one time, and that's been a number of years ago. It was in the winter, I remember that. And more recently, and this has been several years ago, more recently I was at, there's a distribution center in Pennsylvania that I seemed like I did that for a couple of weeks, and I was making all those trips to New Jersey. I think that was in the winter as well, or I'm trying to remember. It may have been more in the summer or the spring, but so I had unloaded at Cheyenne, Wyoming, and they said, "Oh, would you do this Walmart thing for you?" And I unloaded. Actually, I dropped a trailer at Walmart. "We want you to do this for a week, this Walmart thing." And that's one of the Cheyenne, Wyoming is one of the distribution centers where Crete is the carrier. And so I said, sure, I will, but kind of reluctantly. But so I did. Didn't really have that much choice, I don't think. But so I did. And so a lot of the, you know, the first trip that I had, it was, you know, it was to town or two in Wyoming, and then up by Bozeman, Montana. These are reefer loads, and typically they, you know, they may have three or four drops on them, different Walmart or Sam's Club stores. So I did that one, and then, kind of got in a snowstorm, and but I made it back because it was the load unloaded, the final drop unloaded clear up by Bozeman, Montana. So, but I made it back, and I do not like driving in snow, by the way. That's the last thing I like doing. really dislike it. So then there were the bulk of the trips consisted of trips from Cheyenne to Denver. Cheyenne is about 100 miles from Denver and, you know, of course, around Denver and that area. You've got lots of Walmart stores. And so I, you know, a lot of the trips that I had were to those stores around the Denver area. And those weren't so bad. But, you know, there was still, you know, it still involved driving in some snow and so on and so forth. So then the final, or one of the final trips that I made was to Grand Junction, Colorado, which is way out in western Colorado. And so the trip out there, the whole load, it was a Sam's Club load, the whole load went to this Sam's Club store in Grand Junction, Colorado. And so the, you know, it wasn't too bad going out. I made it, you know, past the mountains. You know, you go west out of Denver on I-70. And you've got the, you know, the big, you know, there's several big mountains that you go, you know, you go over, you know, there's like Eisenhower Tunnel and Vail Summit and so on and so forth. And so I made it over those fine on the way out to Grand Junction and then got unloaded in a, you know, it's a reasonable period of time. And then I had to wait a little bit, but then so headed back. But on the way back, got a good chunk of the way, and then there was a snowstorm. And the snowstorm just kind of, you know, coincided with the beginning of the mountain passes. And so, kind of make a long story short, I ran out of time on Vail Summit. There's this, you know, that's one of the one of the mountain passes, and so that, you know, the top of the mountain, Vail Summit, there's a pull off, you know, where you can pull off you know, in a truck or whatever, and I think they have some porta potties there, but it's just a pull off basically. So, but I was out of time and I just barely made it, and it was snowing like crazy, and so I had to spend the night there. And of course, the elevation is like over 10,000 feet, which I'm, you know, that's the other thing that really bothered me about the whole time I was out there was the elevation. It's the first time elevation is that I can recall where it's really bothered me. And boy, I was just kind of huffing and puffing every time I'd exert myself. And that's the first time I ever remember that happening. But, you know, even there, you know, I was warm in the truck and what have you. And, of course, you know, I spent that night there at that pull-off in Vail Summit, you know, over 10,000 feet. And even though I was, you know, warm and, you know, I wasn't out of breath or anything, but at 10,000 feet, my, you know, I could feel my heart beating harder. You know, I could feel the circulation, you know, and it, of course, it's because of the elevation. Now, I guess some people actually get elevation sickness. I guess I should look that up, but I'm assuming it may make them nauseous or something. It didn't do that, but boy, any little exertion, and it seemed like I ran out of breath real quick. So, in any case, the next day I was, you know, after the 10 hours was up, I was able to, it was still snowing, but I was able to go, and the traffic was moving, and so I got out of there, and then I made it back to Cheyenne, and then they did one final trip that went back to, you know, like stores, you know, back in the Denver area, and then I got back, and then that was that, and then I went back to the, you know, like Golden, Colorado, Denver area, picked up a load of beer, and then that went, I dropped that in Wilmer, Texas, the Dallas Yard, Wilmer, Texas, company yard, and let's see, I picked up load, some, I don't know, one of the towns there, one of the suburbs, and Dallas, I don't remember the name of it. And then that load went to Bentonville. And then after, you know, so I took it to Bentonville, and then I was, you know, got to go home after that. So that, I don't know, of any trucking stuff, I do not like driving in snow. And of course, you know, with that, normally if it starts snowing and, you know, the road starts getting slick or whatever, I'm stopping. But in this case, you know, where you've got these stores and everything's kind of got to go, you know, those stores are waiting on the product. People don't kind of, they really don't realize it. You know, when you go to your Walmart store, you just think, oh, the stuff's there on the shelf. Well, the reason the stuff is there on the shelf is because there are trucks that are constantly bringing that stuff on the shelf. And even though, you know, I could have pulled off and said, hey, it's too bad to travel or whatever, I don't feel comfortable driving in the snow. If I did that, I could do that. But then, of course, the other drivers weren't doing it. Excuse me. The other drivers weren't doing it. And, you know, they just kind of muddle right on through. And, you know, so you end up with this kind of a peer pressure type thing. So, but I do not like driving in snow, and I particularly do not like driving in snow in mountains. That sucks. So hopefully I won't ever have to do that again. Retirement is getting closer all the time. Because it's now about, let's say, three and a half years away. So I have to be 66 plus 2 months. I will be 63 in April. So I have to be 66. So 63, 4, 5, 6, and then plus 2 months. So it's actually less than 3.5 years. And, you know, I don't know. Time has a way of, sometimes you think time moves kind of slowly, or, you know, from day to day, it kind of maybe inches along. Or maybe, you know, when you look at kind of waiting for hours to go by or whatever. But on the other hand, time has a way of really slipping by quickly, you know, overall. And, you know, it's pretty remarkable. I think I mentioned, over Christmas I went to, met my folks down in Galveston, my parents. And we had met there 6 years earlier, and I couldn't believe it had been 6 years when we met there before. We stayed in the same motel. It was like a Super 8, and stayed in the same motel. And but I, you know, couldn't believe that it had been 6 years. I would have thought, well, it's been a few years, but not 6 years. And the reason that we knew it was 6 years is because that was when my niece had her first child. And at that point, we met them. They lived in Houston, I think, at that time. And then they came over and met us in Galveston one evening, and we ate. And, at that point, their oldest, what is now their oldest child, was just a baby. You know, that she just had him, not too much before, and it was still nursing. And now he just turned 6. late last year he turned 6. No longer a baby, no, obviously, you know. So time has a way of going by quickly. So the 3.5 years will probably go by pretty fast. So, but that's, I don't know, if I never drive on a, you know, mountain snow-covered road again, it's going to be too soon. That, because I really do not like that. That is not what I absolutely don't like doing that. That's the, you know, that's at the bottom of the list when it comes to, you know, because most of the time I like the job and it's got its challenges. But that's one of the challenges that I would rather avoid completely if possible. So let's see what, okay. Now also, while I was home this time, you know, way back I don't know, it was probably 2001, when I was working at the eye clinic, one day I decided I was going to buy a treadmill. You know, so I went to, it was one of the things I bought at Sears, you know, and that's been a long time ago now. You know, it was better, like 2001. So I went to the local Sears store, and I bought this treadmill, and it was, you know, I don't know. As I recall, I spent $500 or $600 on it. It was Nordic Track, and so the, you know, it's kind of a, you know, nice treadmill. And so I used it, after I got it, I used it a bit, and then of course, especially once I went back to driving the truck, you know, the thing just didn't ever get used. And so it was folded up there in the corner, and, you know, I have it, you know, in the utility room with, you know, with the lawn, you know, the washer and dryer and what have you. And so there it is, you know, and it's been, you know, it just kind of sits there. So I decided that, hey, it would be a good idea if I would, you know, kind of start walking on that thing. You know, not really to kind of, you know, necessarily get into better shape per se or anything like that. But, you know, walking is good exercise. And so I, you know, kind of moved the stuff around and cleaned the room out a little bit and folded the thing down and walked on it a bit. And I decided, hey, that, you know, I kind of like this. This is, you know, just walking a mile or two on it, you know, because it's able to keep track of the distance. Walking a mile or two on it, I decided, hey, you know, even though my legs afterwards felt a little bit like jello, that it may, you know, I did kind of feel better, you know, and I don't, that's kind of nebulous to say feel better, but you know, I liked the, you know, the result, you know, and it's just kind of instant results. So I decided, hey, I need something to keep myself occupied while I'm walking. And so I ended up buying a 32-inch Roku TV, manufactured for Roku by TCL. And I think, you know, I just went ahead and got it at Walmart. I could have gotten it cheaper if I would have wanted to wait on it through Amazon Prime, but I, you know, it was at the local Walmart store, and, you know, they had a 32-inch version, and that's, you know, that was plenty big for what I was using it for, because I've got it up on top of this shelf that's, you know, kind of right in front of the treadmill, and it's just the right size. Yeah, anything bigger than that wouldn't have, you know, would have had a hard time making it fit, if it would fit at all. So, you know, 40 inches would have been too big, but a 32 was, you know, perfect. So they had a for sale for $148. Like I say, I could have gotten it cheaper. I could have saved a few dollars if I would have bought it at, you know, from Amazon. But, you know, it was kind of a spur of the moment thing. I wanted it. They had it in stock. And I bought it. And so, you know, and then the remainder of the time while I was home, I, you know, I've made a point of walking on that at least once or twice a day. And that really did make a difference, being able to kind of watch something and, you know, watch something and actually kind of really pay attention to whatever it was I'm, you know, whatever it was I watched. And then the walking, you know, I'm not trying to break any records or anything. And I'm, you know, it's just like a 2 mile an hour thing. And maybe, you know, maybe a mile at a time, or, you know, and at some point, you know, maybe I can up the mileage or whatever. Not really worried about trying to up the speed. 2 miles an hour is fast enough, you know, because you get much, you know, really aggressive with walking, or, you know, people try to jog on those things, and, you know, that you end up becoming too aggressive and you end up causing injuries and problems. And so walking is really the perfect exercise, you know, like to just kind of, as far as what you're going to feel and, you know, the benefit of kind of getting your blood moving and kind of feeling better and being, you know, it's just kind of a good thing. And it, you know, it may also kind of enhance sleep a little bit. So because you burn off just a little bit of energy, you know, not a whole lot, because, you know, walking a mile by its calculator, you know, it's like 192 calories, so that, you know, if you ate a 200 calorie chocolate bar, you're not going to quite burn it off. But that's really not the point. It's just, you know, kind of walking is good. Now, I enjoy walking, but I would walk, you know, like tonight. I'm in this truck stop here in Rogers, Minnesota, outside of, it's kind of northwest of Minneapolis, St. Paul, a little bit. And, you know, kind of Rogers is sort of a suburb. So, you know, could I walk here? Probably. Would it be safe? Probably not. Because, not because I'm afraid of the neighborhood, but because of the, you might get run over. Because of, you know, any other problem is it's kind of cold. Sort of cold and miserable. It's, you know, and it's 40-something degrees, and it's probably going to get, you know, because there's still snow cover on the ground here, it's probably going to get, you know, below freezing. And, but right now, I'd say the temperature's probably in the 30s, you know, because it was in the 40s earlier when the sun was out. So, you know, that's just too cold, too miserable, too much danger, too dangerous to walk around in a truck stop parking lot. Because ever so often, you know, if you dig for the stories, and you can find where people get, you know, they die because they get run over by a truck. Some, you know, somebody doesn't see them or whatever. So, you know, and or they weren't paying attention either. That's the other part of it, you know, because it's one thing to, you know, rely on someone else to see you as a pedestrian, but it's, you know, you better be paying attention, you know, kind of walk defensively. Defensive walking. Make sure you're not walking out in front of something. Or something doesn't come barreling by and zap, you know, and they don't see you, and then you saw them, but they didn't see you. So, you've got to pay attention. So it's just, you know, so I don't bother trying to walk in a truck stop parking lot. I will once in a great while, but it has to be good weather and daylight and not too much danger of getting run over. So anyway, that Roku TV is pretty neat. It's got the Roku, that's the operating system basically for the TV. And, of course, it still has a tuner in it. So they just kind of add Antenna TV as one of the apps right at the top, you know. And it, once I signed in, then it downloaded all the apps that I have on my other Roku devices, and everything updated, and which took a little while. And then, you know, the thing works great. It's just, you know, works really good. It works right on Wi-Fi. I don't think it has an Ethernet port. I didn't, you know, maybe I missed it, but I don't think even there's an Ethernet port. I think it's just strictly Wi-Fi. But it works fine on Wi-Fi, and, you know, it's just 720p, but it's 32 inches. You know, even, you know, if you 1080p, you're probably going to be hard-pressed to see too much of a difference between 1080p and 720p especially streaming on a 32-inch screen. You might be able to tell the difference, I don't know, but probably not. So, but anyway, I'm pretty happy with that, and so I will make use of that while I'm home, and then I think, of course, once I retire, then plan on making use of it as well. So I did that. Let's see, was there anything else? I think that's it. That's the only two things that really stand out. So I have a comment sent, a couple of comments, a longer one and a shorter one from Joel. Sent that today, and that I was going to record a podcast, and then Joel sent the message, and then that kind of pushed me over the edge. So I just, you know, and I had extra time. I was going to drop and hook at this Target distribution center in Fridley, Minnesota. Fridley is another suburb of Minneapolis, St. Paul. And so I dropped the trailer there, and then, of course, they didn't have any empty trailers. They had, you know, there were three reefer trailers there, And all three, you know, from my company, and all three of them were loaded. So sent the message to the dispatcher, and they said, well, go to a truck stop and then come back tomorrow and try to get one. And so I've got a phone number for them. So I'll call them in the morning and see if they've got an empty Schaefer trailer. And if they do, fine, you know, then, but otherwise I'll just keep trying to call them and, you know, until they actually have one or they think they're going to have one. Because if I, you know, by the time I drive back over there, it's going to start the clock again, you know, because it's the distribution center is, you know, straight line. It's like 14 miles from here. But by the time you drive here, it's like 24 miles, you know, so it adds 10 miles to the trip. Because there are no roads that go in a straight line from here to the distribution center, so from this truck stop. So anyway, I've got the comments from Joel, so might as well listen to those. So here is Joel.
Hey Tom, hope all is well. Hopefully you are doing well. Just wanted to send you a Vox on a couple things. Well, first, I missed your show. I know you haven't recorded one in a while. Maybe this will get you to do that. I'm kidding. You don't have to do it just for me. But just little of venting here on some things. One thing I just learned is starting July 2nd, our state will no longer issue their driver's licenses to you in person. What they do when you go to the BMV for the license renewal is they hand you a piece of paper that will be used to confirm that your license is being renewed, and then they mail you one 10 days later. And the worst part of this all is if you happen to travel like I do every once in a while on an airline, you must make sure that you stipulate that your ID satisfies the federal requirements. It doesn't cost any extra. You do have to bring in like a bill or something to prove that you live in the United States, or it's some pointless thing that you have to do to get the federal ID, which is kind of dumb. But anyway, and there are a whole claiming for this to be for security. And like I said, I guess 41 other states do this. Not a fan of that. Not a fan of that. I don't know if Arkansas does that with you. I know you probably have different things because of your commercial license that you need to maintain. So that's one thing.
Okay, so let me interrupt. Yeah, if you want more podcasts, I hate to say this, but if you want more podcasts, I need some more comments. it's tough to, you know, I'll admit, it's kind of tough to motivate myself to do this sometimes. It's all about motivation. And even though I kind of intended to record a podcast and I kind of wanted to, I am not willing anymore to cut into my sleep, and it used to be that I really cut into my sleep time a lot. You know, back when I was, especially when I was doing one every day, or almost every day, there was a lot of times where I was shorting myself on sleep, and I won't do that anymore. And you know, and so it, the motivation just isn't as, you know, it isn't as strong as it used to be. And so it does help if I have comments. So that aside, now, I don't ever travel, you know, on airlines or anything. So I, you know, for all I know, Arkansas may be one of those states. I have no idea. But what I can tell you is for a commercial driver's license, and this is a federal thing as well, you have to bring in, you know, and I was, you know, this last time I renewed my driver's license, they told, you know, they sent a letter, you know, it was almost a year before that or a number of months in advance, they sent this thing, the state of Arkansas sent this letter saying that next time you renew your CDL, you're going to have to bring in, even though you've had a CDL all these years, you're going to have to bring in a birth certificate. So I was able to, because I knew about this in advance, I was able to contact the, you know, I was born in a county in Kansas, and so I was able to secure a copy of my birth certificate. You know, and it didn't cost very much, but I was able to do it more or less, I guess it was online, you know, through this website, and it didn't cost much, maybe $10. So I got the birth certificate, and then I put it, you know, in the envelope that it came in, put it on, you know, like on a shelf on my dresser at home, and it sat there for a number of months until it was time to renew my driver's license. And so I, you know, just whenever it was time to renew, I took it in, and I was completely prepared, and it all went pretty smoothly. So, but, you know, bureaucrats don't have much to do. They try to make, they're trying to make themselves feel relevant. And so a lot of these things that they come up with, you know, they want to feel relevant, and they love to exercise their power. And so they come up with these different things to, you know, kind of do, you know, maybe satisfy both of those, you know, those needs that they have. And they, you know, it doesn't really improve safety. You know, it doesn't really, you know, nothing's really improved. I mean, they know who you are, you know, especially these days. I mean, if we can, you know, there's a little bit of bank fraud that goes on, you know, but overall, you know, your online banking, you know, your bank is able to, you know, maintain the security. They kind of know who you are. And people that really want to do business with you know who you are. And yet, here's the government, oh, you got to prove this, and you got to prove that, and we want a copy of this, and we want a copy of that. You know, even though they know who you are, et cetera, it's ridiculous. But it's, you know, it's the thing that, you know, the secular fundamentalists worship. That's what they worship. They worship their government. You know, and the bureaucrat and the government, you know, like I've said before, show me where it actually exists. It's just it's an imaginary thing. It only exists in our minds. It's an imaginary concept. You know, you can point out the buildings and you can point out the people that, you know, the people that work for the government, you know, and, or whatever, but it doesn't really exist. It's just an imaginary thing. And the government, especially federal government, is sort of a man-made god. And, you know, people that don't, you know, they don't want, for whatever reason, don't want to believe in the real God, want to believe in the man-made God. And, of course, the man-made God is, you know, turns into a tyrant. By, you know, it has to turn into a tyrant. It can't be benevolent. It must, in the end, turn into a tyrant. Because you have, you know, tyrannical people are the ones that worship it. So it's kind of like bullies. You have bullies and cowards. Bullies are... What are bullies? They're just basically they're tyrants. Strong before the weak, weak before the strong. So someone that's a coward before, you know, a strong bully is, you know, find somebody weaker than he or she is, and then they're the bully to the coward. Excuse me. So, you know, when with our shortcomings, if we worship government, and anybody that worships government, anyone that has an, you know, kind of a, you know, the, you know, a worship or, you know, sort of an attachment or a reverence for government, you know, some sort of an emotional feeling for it, that it's, you know, somehow, you know, somehow it's, you know, and it tries to be all knowing and, you know, so on and so forth. Anyone that has that feeling, that, that thinks, you know, that believes in the government and believes that the government should be more powerful and et cetera, that type of person is dysfunctional. That type of person is a tyrant, and, you know, kind of small tyrant. You know, and they're probably, you know, strong before the weak, weak before the strong. They're tyrants to some of the people around them. But they love their little, that's their little thing that they love. You know, that's the thing that they, it's a religion, it's a form of religion. Then they're able to feel better about themselves. Anything that you use to, you know, like that, to feel better about yourself, is going to turn into a tyrant. Whether it's a person, place, or thing. You're, you know, you're inviting that thing to turn, become your, to be your tyrant. Then you kind of end up with a love-hate relationship with it. So by definition, government turns into a tyrant, you know, if you have dysfunctional people. Now, if you have a majority of people that are, and it doesn't have to be everybody, but, it, you know, a majority of people that look at it and, you know, put it in the proper perspective, and you have a majority of the population that's able, you know, that's kind of self, has self-control and doesn't, you know, doesn't, you know, kind of get out of hand and is really kind of law-abiding and they have self-control, don't really, there's really no need for government. And so the, you know, the, all those government programs, there's no need for them. And, you know, you have, you know, I think ideally maybe we'd, you know, you'd, government would clean up the streets and maybe do some defense or whatever, and that would be that. Uh-oh, battery is running low. Better stop this. Okay, I got it safely plugged in. So, anyway, I think I made the point. Better get back to Joel's comment. So here's the rest of Joel's comment.
The other is all this misplaced rage on the NRA. In specifically the AR-15, I'm probably going to actually join the NRA, and I don't even own a firearm yet. Mostly because I absolutely believe you should have the right to own an AR-15 or any other gun.
Okay, well, let me interrupt. That's the other thing that I did that I forgot about. You know, as soon as all of this stuff started, you know, and especially after some of the companies that were giving discounts to NRA members all of a sudden decided we're not going to give you the discount anymore, I didn't think twice. I went ahead. I'd never have. My parents belong to the NRA. I never have. You know, even though I'm kind of sympathetic, I never have. And so I went to their website and paid the $40 for a year's membership. And I joined it. And I really don't care, you know, they send, you know, all kinds of little totes and hats or whatever. I don't, or t-shirts, I don't care, whatever. But I immediately joined it. And, you know, I don't have anything against guns. I've never really been particularly interested in them. My family, you know, my parents and my younger brothers have, you know, been, you know, kind of hunters and all, you know, so on and so forth, and they all own guns, and, you know, I just didn't, never, I haven't ever particularly cared, and even at this point, you know, I don't really care, you know, I don't have anything against guns, but I just don't have any, if I don't have any interest, that's, it goes back to the motivation thing, if I don't have any interest in something, I can't, force myself to become interested. It's, you know, it's just not possible. And I, you know, and I won't force myself to do. But on the other hand, in this case, I just went ahead. I just immediately joined. That was all it took. And, you know, because I think it's very important to defend the Second Amendment. You know, liberals have this dream that they can take all the guns away and then they can kind of, then the government can just be as tyrannical as it wants to be. You know, so it's important that we keep the Second Amendment intact. So, but I did join, and I suspect, I don't know, I guess they give that they release their membership numbers at some point, but I suspect that I wasn't the only one that had this reaction. And I bet you there, I bet you the number of people joining the NRA is through the roof at this point. I'd be shocked if it wasn't. So I bet you they've gained a lot in membership, which is good. You know, because I, like I say, I've been sympathetic to them before. I'm sympathetic to the gun, you know, Second Amendment, et cetera, et cetera. But I've just never had any personal interest. This was enough to kind of push me over the top as far as personal interest goes. You know. And I, you know, even at that, I'm, you know, I don't have a gun, don't really care about shooting. It's kind of expensive. You know, at one time it was a lot cheaper as a hobby. But, you know, Obama seemed to make it a whole lot more expensive with the bullets and what have you. And then, of course, the gun sales went through the roof during the Obama administration. And then they made the ammunition more expensive. And so I don't know if that's actually abated or not, but in any case, it's a kind of an expensive thing to be, you know, if you go to a gun range or whatever, that's an expensive thing to do. So I really, you know, even though I could probably target, shoot, or, you know, my own property or whatever, I don't really care. I'm not interested in that at this point. But I am interested enough in, you know, I'll send money or join the thing to protect the Second Amendment because it is important. You know, now if I had a reason, if I had a, you know, an actual reason to own a gun and shoot it, you know, per, you know, target practice and what have you, then I would do it. But at this point, I've just, you know, I've never had a reason to. So, and that has yet to actually change. But in the meantime, I did join, and I, as I say, I suspect that their membership numbers are through the roof. I'd be shocked if they weren't.
I don't think we need additional gun control laws. And I do think that Sheriff Scott Israel in Parkland completely failed and should resign. Yeah, I just, all this misplaced rage. And then of course, Dick's Sporting Goods announced, oh, we're not going to carry the AR-15 anymore. But then if you look, they also carry the Ruger Mini 14, which basically is the same thing as an AR-15, except it's not military style. It's made out of wood. Craziness. And virtual signaling. Not for one minute do I believe that Dick's actually cares about kids, actually cares about anything but money. Because watch this. If that happens, you know, if the AR-15 results in their profits going down, they'll bring it back. You know it. I know it. That's how business works. And there's all these people on the left are cheering that, you know, they're basically the ones, and ironically of all this, the ones that call Trump a Nazi are acting more like Nazis than Trump has ever. Take care. Oh, and on a further note, and a more fun note, I'm planning on going and picking up the DJI Osmo Mobile 2. And essentially what that is a gimbal that you would mount your cell phone in. And it keeps, basically, it helps stabilize your phone as you're shooting video. It's essentially the same gimbal assembly that's on the bottom of your drone. So that's one thing. And then the next, I'm looking at probably next month picking up a DJI. I'm probably going to do the Mavic Air is what I'm thinking, because I want something that does 4K video. But those are the two things I'm looking at. The Osmo Mobile 2 is only $129. So for me, that's worth it, because I do like to shoot video with my phone.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. The big thing with, you know, we've had all these school shootings and so on and so forth, and it's been going on for a long time. You know, and it's not the gun control laws. You know, people think, oh, we need to, you know, control the guns. And that's just it's a smokescreen. They don't really care about the kids. It's all about taking the guns away, and then they think they can force the, you know, their agenda down our throats. You know, and they really believe that they're going to create utopia. You know, that, you know, by forcing liberalism down everybody's throats, communism, etc., etc., by forcing it down our throats, they're going to create utopia. They really do believe that. And if you try to confront them, you know, they'll say, oh, well, it's never been done right. They didn't do it right. The communists didn't do it right. We're better people. We're going to do it right. They just didn't do it. They didn't implement it right. It's a bottomless pit, by the way. Because at the end of that, everyone, every man, woman, and child on Earth would be dead. So, you know, the gun control thing, you know, and then there probably are a few dupes that think, oh, well, if we just secure all the guns, then get rid of the shootings. What the real problem is, and I've talked about this before, and it's worth mentioning again and again, the real problem is the lack of state-funded mental institutions. You heard me right. You know, I'm conservative. I don't like big government, but that's one thing that we should, you know, if you want a government function, here's one thing that we should have: state-funded mental institutions like we used to have back in the 50s. And of course, starting in the 1960s, they started, oh, you can't keep these people locked up against their will. They didn't commit any crimes. Deinstitutionalization. And that went on in the 60s and the 70s, probably into the 80s. And where do you think all these homeless people came from? Because a good chunk of them are insane. Now, you know, we as a rational person, it's probably impossible to kind of put yourself, you know, wrap your mind around, sort of put yourself in the position of someone that truly is insane. You know, because just imagine, you know, knowing what we know about how our brains work, you know, and our brains are really good at recognizing patterns. Just imagine that your brain, you know, for whatever reason, you know, started recognizing things that weren't there. You know, imagine that you actually heard things that didn't exist. You know, you like the typical things, people hear voices, and they actually do hear them. They've proven that with MRIs, you know, like fMRI. You know, the schizophrenics actually do hear voices that aren't there. There are people in this world, you know, and you can, you know, whine or moan or groan about it, and it's not fair, but there are people in this world that cannot take care of themselves. They're a danger to themselves and others. So one of the big liberal progressive things was to deinstitutionalize the people in the state funded mental institutions. You know, oh, they're just looking at the world differently than you do. You can't lock them up. If they want to live out on the street, more power to them. If they want to go to the toilet out on the street, more power to them. Who are you to judge? But I was, you know, I realized today, I was talking to somebody and I realized, I think one of the reasons why, and it's liberals, the so-called progressive liberals, the reason that they are so against mental institutions is because liberalism itself is a mental disorder. Emotions, as I've said before, emotions are a form of insanity. You know, so if you want a little taste of what insanity is like, get really emotional. And you're partway there. Emotions are a form of insanity. Liberalism is a form of insanity. So I think that's one of the reasons why they may not realize it themselves, but they just sort of, you know, are against those things. You know, they want, oh, you can't lock those people up. How dare you lock them up? How dare you stigmatize them? And of course, they're the ones that are probably stigmatizing them. What is stigmatize? You know, what is that? You know, it's an emotional reaction to whatever it is. If I say abortion is murder, is that stigmatizing the abortionist or the abortionist or the person that has abortion, that's gotten an abortion? I'm not adding any emotion to it. I'm just stating a fact. They're the ones that are adding the emotion to it, and that's where the stigmatization is happening. Stigmatization only happens with emotions. Take the emotions out of it. It's just, you know, simple logic. Abortion is murder. Sorry. And if we have people that, for whatever reason, lack mental stability. You know, and this guy that, you know, this 19-year-old that shot all those people up in Florida in the school, clearly, you know, they knew that he was crazy. You know, and they knew that there was a problem and the law enforcement really didn't want to touch it. Oh, you got to commit a crime before we can get involved. You know, and of course, it's just the sheriff thing. It just reeks of liberalism, which, again, liberalism is a form of insanity. So there you have an insane system, insane sheriff, not doing his job with an insane, you know, somebody that really is insane, you know, even more. The 19-year-old, sort of protecting him. So we really do need to bring back state-funded mental institutions. You know, and you have to pay for that. You know, that's. Do you think that's a humane thing to do? Is, you know, turn someone out that doesn't have a clear grasp of reality? Do you think that's a good thing to just dump them out? Oh, you well here, take here's some medications. And invariably, they won't take the medications on their own because they don't like the way it makes them feel. But there are people that need to be locked up. You know, have you ever seen the first few minutes of the movie Amadeus? Now, that's a real exaggeration of, you know, like a European, you know, like a, you know, I, you know, I don't know, 1700s, 1800s, maybe 1700s, European crazy house. I don't know what they actually called them. But that's probably not that far off the mark. And there are people that are that crazy, that are that dysfunctional, that are, you know, it's their, you know, for whatever reason, their mental faculties just aren't there, or they're deranged, they're dangerous, danger to themselves, danger to others. And we must have a system that deals with that. Is it unfortunate? Sure. But it's better to lock those people up. Kind of protect them from themselves, and certainly to protect other people. And if we still had the mental institutions that we had, before the 1960s, before they started dismantling it, if we still had that system, then all of these shootings wouldn't be happening. And of course, the other problem is that we've got all of these so-called single-parent families. Where there's no father. That's a recipe for disaster. So instead, you know, the liberal mindset, oh, well, we'll just turn the whole society into an insane asylum and we'll take the guns away from everybody. So you want to find out what happens if you take the guns away. You know, look at Great Britain. Great Britain has tried to take the guns away. And what do they have? Stabbing here, stabbing there. You look in their news. Their news is full of stabbings. People are still killing each other. The problem isn't solved. And I don't know if Great Britain still has mental institutions or not. That'd be something interesting to research. But that really is the number one thing, is to bring back the state-funded mental institutions. And then secondly, turn this whole single parent family thing around. You know, bring back the so-called nuclear family with a mom and a dad. Stable parents. The government is not God. The government is not your mother or father. The government is not, if you're a woman, the government is not your husband. The government isn't your nanny. You know, and it's just simply bringing into existence, you know, all of these maladies, these social maladies bring into on earth as it is in hell. So this Dick's Sporting Goods, I don't know, I've only been in one of the stores. I've seen them here and there, and I don't know, about a month ago I was in one, and you know, just kind of looking at it because I was kind of curious, and I, you know, whatever, you know, them coming out, well, we're gonna ban such and such gun, this AR-15 or whatever. They had actually done that after the Newton, Massachusetts thing, and but then they didn't. So they've played this game before. It's kind of like Target in the bathrooms, which that hurt them. That hurt Target bad, by the way, and it also hurt the bathroom thing. Also hurt Starbucks as well, as it should have. Keep your mouth shut. If you're in business, don't get involved in this stuff, is my advice. Excuse me. So, now Walmart did come out today, or this evening, and they said that they will no longer sell guns to anyone under 21 years of age. And now, I can actually get behind that. I don't have a problem with that. Because, and the reason I don't have a problem with it is because we've got all of these crazy, you know, people now that were born, they were, didn't have a dad, no dad involved, you know, they're the product of a so-called single-parent family, just mom and a welfare check, no dad. Don't know who dad is. Just a sperm donor. Mom couldn't keep her legs closed. You know, so we got these people running around, like this guy, in the 19-year-old in Florida. That was in the, I guess his mother died, his actual mother died. Then they put him in this foster home at 19 years old. They put him in a foster home. That's kind of weird. I don't know. I've deliberately avoided any, you know, reading about any of this stuff. I just see headlines and what people have said, told me about it. But I see headlines here and there. Little bits and pieces. I am still, you know, really just avoiding the news like the plague, because a lot of it's fake. There's a lot of fake news. There's a lot of people with agendas, you know, and of course they want us to, you know, strike while the iron's hot, you know, get legislation through while everybody's emotional. And of course that's, you do anything in an emotional state, and chances are, about 99.99999%, it's going to be the wrong thing. Never act out of emotions. It's a horrible mistake. Terrible mistake. You want to wait until all the emotion is gone, and then look at it completely logically with no emotion whatsoever. Then you can begin to weigh things. But if you try to do it with emotion, forget it. It's just going to make things worse. But, you know, we have these teenagers now running around, lots of them, millions of them, possibly, and especially the young males, because, you know, how many girls are involved in these shootings? Never. It's always young men. So, I don't have a problem with not selling, you know, with withholding guns until somebody's 21. Then they can, you know, then they can do it. And by the time they're 21, maybe they, you know, they might be a little more reasonable. Although, you know, look at the, I guess you could look at, insurance company actuarial tables for teenage drivers and, you know, men that are in, you know, young men that are in their 20s. At what point does the insurance kind of normalize? You know, the insurance, you know, for the, you know, because it's always higher for young males. And it's because statistically young men are reckless. You know, so that it kind of declines as someone gets up into their 20s, as a male gets up into their 20s, the insurance rates sort of decline. And then it, you know, and then it kind of levels off after that. But certainly if you have a driver in their teens, it's going to be the most expensive. And so, you know, so I don't really have a problem with, you know, 20, 21 years old. Maybe let's raise it to 25. Really wouldn't have a problem with that. But certainly 21 is reasonable. You know, and then the other angle of this is that you know, they've tried to delay the onset of maturity as much as possible. Keep everyone in a, you know, in an infantile state as much as possible. You know, and the school system, everything is geared towards keeping you. Oh, we'll keep you a child. You know, you're a child until you're 26 on it with Obamacare, I think. Which is absurd. You're not a child at 26. You know, and you got all these, you know, people in their 20s and 30s still living in the basement, and they're still living at home. The idiotic parents are paying their way. I was talking to this gal. I was getting the trailer washed out yesterday, and I was talking to this gal. She said, well, her younger brother, still, he was in his 20s, and he'd moved back home, and, you know, the parents were supporting him. You know, the dad was like 60 years old, you know, and they were supporting him and feeding him, and he had a job. You know, he worked in a warehouse. He had a job, and he had a new car, and he bought, you know, he spent his money on video games, which I guessed. I, you know, before she could say, I said, and he spends all his money on video games, right? She said, yeah, actually he does. So he's got his new, you know, he has his video games, and he's got his car, and he works second shift, and he gets off at midnight, and then he goes home to mommy and daddy, probably, you know, basement or in his room or whatever, and he plays video games, and then he goes to bed, and then he gets up and goes back to work at noon. So in the meantime, doesn't have to pay for rent, doesn't have to worry about buying food, you know, and so it's pretty ridiculous. Those parents don't love that kid, you know, and he's not a kid anymore, he's an adult. They don't love him, they never did. There's the proof. They never pushed him out of the nest. It's ridiculous. So anyway, probably better be bringing this to a close, see if I can get it put together and uploaded. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.